Welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bonnie at IUP and the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so excited to be here with all of you today. Great show. My guest will be Chef Charles Carroll, author of The Recipe, a story of loss, love, and the ingredients of greatness. And I'm really thrilled to have him on today. But first, I want to talk about some things going on in the news, some things coming up that you may want to participate in, and, of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So some things going on. Well, Christmas is 12 days away. We're in the middle of Hanukkah, and other international holidays are coming up as well that other people celebrate. And so this is a really beautiful time of year. Here in New York, looking outside, it's all white and beautiful, and I'm so happy to be with all of you. Some of the things coming up this weekend is when I start cooking for some of the less fortunate people who live in the Queens area. Every year for the past 23 years, I've been partnering with the River Fund Food Pantry, bringing a Thanksgiving feast and a Christmas meal to those living around Rufus King Park, who are less fortunate than I am and than that many of us in my community are. And so we come together to cook as a community and bring them a really delicious hot meal. We've been collecting coats, so we have a huge pile of coats here that we will be distributing along with blankets and sleeping bags. And we have toys. The River Fund has an incredible bunch of people and organizations that donate gifts to them so that parents that are coming and waiting online can pick out some gifts for their children. We've also been doing a jewelry collection for the last few years, encouraging people to clean out their jewelry boxes, polish their things up that they don't wear, and bring them over to the IE Green Homestead. And we rebox them and package them up so that they can be gifts for some of the older children. And it's been a great program. So if you have any coats or jewelry that you would like to donate, please bring it down to the IE Green Homestead in Old Westbury. There are signups on my website for signing up. Many of the shifts are filled, but there's still some shifts open if you want to lend a hand in the preparations. And then on Tuesday, we'll be serving in Rufus King Park. So I'm really excited to be doing that again. On Monday, at the Brooklyn Museum, they're having their ninth annual Latke Festival, which is always a fun thing. This is a fundraiser for the Sylvia Center, which is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to addressing childhood food related diseases and food insecurity. They have a wonderful organic farm upstate New York, Catchkey Farm, and these funds go to support that. So if you like latkes, that's the place you want to be. It's a great, great event. Also on January 10th, the Long Island Agricultural Forum has a two-day educational conference at Suffolk County Community College, and that should be a wonderful event as well. And on January 13th, I will be doing a cooking class here at IE Green Homestead. Menus still to be decided, and signups are coming. So if you're interested in that, but I also will have a free class at the Westbury Library on January 15th, where we'll be making a vegetarian jambalaya and a vegetable curry quinoto. The vegetable curry quinoto is a dish that I learned to make when I was in Peru in the Sacred Valley, and quinoa there is used the way pasta is used in Italy. So this quinoto is kind of like a risotto, a vegetable curry risotto, but made with quinoa. So anyway, that is Monday, January 15th, if you want to come to that. On January 17th, there is the Sustainable Film Series that is put on by Molloy College will be happening again, January 17th. It's out east on the island. They're showing the film Food Evolution. And it's supposed to be a great film. Lots of great discussion. They have a free vegan meal ahead of time. And then a discussion following the film. So if you're interested in that, all of these, you can sign. You can find out more information on my website at ieatgreen.com. Also, the NOFA New York Winter Conference is coming up January 19th through the 21st. I will be doing a cooking demo there as well on January 19th. And the NOFA Winter Conference is a really great happening. It's a coming together of farmers from all across the state, food producers, consumers, people that just love food who want to come together for great workshops. Workshops, lectures, hands-on experience. And then, of course, at night, there's film shows, there's contra dancing, lots of great food. So registration for that is happening now. Early bird special is still going on, I think, through this weekend. So check that out. What else is going on in the news? Well, of course, not getting too much into political stuff. I'm really happy to say that Doug Jones won in Alabama, which is really a wonderful, wonderful thing, considering he was not supposed to win. But his rival certainly was not someone anyone wanted to vote for. So that was a good thing. There is a merger in the news between Bayer and Monsanto that we're trying to keep from happening. There's a petition on my website for you to sign up and send your name in to support our pollinators, both bees and butterflies. You know, Bayer, has their bee killing pesticide, and Monsanto has their butterfly killing pesticide, and together they're just going to decimate our pollinators. So please sign that petition. And this holiday season, think of giving to those organizations that are close and dear to your heart, organizations that are trying to make a difference in this world. And we all need to get out there and show up and put our bodies on the line if need be to let our voices be heard. I mean, our food system is in grave danger. Our current administration does not support climate change, or doesn't support or even believe in climate change. Therefore, they don't support anything having to do with saving the environment and protecting the environment. And that's something that we all really need to work for and do. So I beg all of you to find an organization that is close to your heart that you can feel good about. There are so many out there, Cornucopia, Food and Water Watch, Long Island Progressives, Rise and Resist. I mean, there's so many, the Sierra Club, I could just go on and on. There are so many organizations doing really good work out there. Find one that you can feel good about and participate. Get out there. Let that be your New Year's resolution this year, to really make a commitment to working with others. And the more you work with others, the less depressed you get about the current situation, because you at least feel like you're doing something. You're not just sitting around complaining. You're actually out there trying to make the world a better place. And we all need to do our part. And I'll be talking with Chef Charles in a little bit about some of the ways that he's making the world a better place too. So stay tuned for that. I want to share with you my recipe this week. This week it's a 4-bean vegetable chili. And as the weather changes and it gets colder, we always tend to want to go more towards stews and warming foods. And I just had this craving for chili this week, and that's what I made. And it was funny because this chili took forever to actually make, because I guess my beans have been sitting around for the past year, so they were a bit old. And I found out that older beans take a little longer to cook, so just stay patient. They did eventually cook. So if your beans are old, they're still good. Make sure you soak them overnight, and then you can cook them up. So this recipe for the beans, I used 4 different beans. And you can really play around with what bean combination you use. I used 1 cup of dry organic pinto beans, 2 cups of dry organic red kidney beans, 2 cups of dry organic black beans, 1 cup of dry organic cannellini beans, 5 bay leaves, 1 to 2 large pieces of kombu seaweed, and a tablespoon of salt. And I soaked the beans overnight, and I actually soaked the black beans separately because I know that they take a little bit longer to cook than the pinto and kidney beans and cannellini beans. So I soaked those separately so that when I started to cook them the next day, I could put them in the water for an hour extra before I added the other beans. And the kombu, whenever I'm cooking beans, I always cook them with kombu, which is a seaweed and helps make the beans easier to digest and make them less gassy. So that's something that is really a great thing to add to your beans. For the rest of the ingredients, I used one small can of tomato paste, 2 organic onions that I chopped up, 4 long green organic peppers that I chopped up, 1/2 a cup of shredded carrots, 2 tablespoons of minced garlic, 1 large can of organic fire roasted tomatoes, 1 can of organic fire roasted tomatoes, oh, 1 small can, and then also 1 small can of the fire roasted tomatoes that had chili peppers in them, 2 teaspoons salt, 2 teaspoons smoked paprika, 3 teaspoons chili powder, 3 teaspoons chipotle powder, 1 jalapeno pepper chopped, 2 habanero peppers chopped, 4 cups of broccoli florets cut small, 1 tablespoon of tamari, 1 8-ounce block of tempeh, and 3 tablespoons of fresh chopped cilantro. And you can certainly use more cilantro than that. You just have to go easy on the cilantro because, of course, there's some people that really don't like that. So if you have any of those people in your crowd, you can even leave the cilantro on the side for the whole thing. So as I said, I started by soaking the beans overnight, soaking the black beans separately because they take a little longer to cook. The next day, I drained the beans. I put the black beans, the kombu, and the salt, and the bay leaves into a heavy stock pot filled with filtered water. And you want the water to be at least 2 inches above the beans, and set the beans on the stove, bring it to a boil, then reduce the heat to a simmer. Now, you can also, of course, cook beans in a pressure cooker, which will make it go much faster. But I was making a big pot of chili, and my pressure cooker is not as big. So I did it just in a big stock pot. And after I cooked those for about 45 minutes to an hour, then I added the other beans in, added some more boiling water so that, again, the water was 2 inches above the beans, brought it back to a boil, and then reduced it again, let that cook for another 1.5 to 2 hours until the beans were soft. Once the beans were soft, in a cast iron pan, I sauteed the onions until they caramelized. And I've been trying to cook with a little bit less oil, so I actually didn't even add oil to the cast iron pan. The cast iron pan's so well seasoned that the onions did not stick, and I was able to just caramelize them just in the pan, and I used a little water. And you can use a little water to caramelize them, and I was able to do without the oil. Then I added the peppers and the garlic, and they continued sauteing those until they were soft. Then I pushed the vegetables to the side and added the tomato paste in the middle of the pan and just let that brown a little bit, cook that down. And that just gives the tomato paste a deeper flavor. While that was sauteing, I pulsed the tempeh in the food processor until it was all broken up into very small little granules. And I spread that out on a cookie sheet with parchment paper, and I just spread it out and I put it into a 375 degree oven and just roasted that in the oven until the tempeh pieces were golden brown, and I removed those. And those act as, one, they give protein into the chili, although you have all the beans as well, but it looks like chopped meat when it's in the chili. And so much about cooking is the visuals and having something look like what people are familiar with. And as someone who loves to cook for people that are non-vegetarians, and I love cooking vegetarian food for them, you want it to look familiar to them, the way that they're used to looking. So the tempeh does that. And so I added the tempeh into the beans. And I then added all of the onions, peppers, and tomatoes from the cast iron pan also into the beans. I added the shredded carrots into the beans, the tamari, the salt, the diced tomatoes, and I brought all that back up to a boil, and then reduced it. I also added the broccoli and the cilantro and just let that cook down for a bit, let all those flavors come together, taste it, and adjust the spices to your taste. If you would like a little bit more flavor but not any more heat, you can add some cumin. That gives some of that flavor of the chili without any of the heat. Otherwise, the chili powder is a nice, you know, mixed combination of seasonings already together, but it does have some of the red pepper in it, so it would make it a little hotter. And let that cook down and just taste it and, you know, adjust the spices how you like it. I also have not gone heavy on the salt. So if you need more salt in there, you can either add it or just serve it, you know, put salt on the table and let people do their own. And I served it with brown rice. I've also served it over brown rice pasta. So whichever way you like, it's delicious. It comes together really, you know, it sounds like a lot, but really it's just cooking on the stove. It's just time on the stove. It really does not take a lot of time. But enjoy it. It's really warming. I still have some in the refrigerator. I'm going to bring it tonight to, tonight is the Food and Water Watch's holiday party at the Shelter Rock, on Shelter Rock Road at the Unitarian Universalist Church. So I'll be going there this evening for the Food and Water Watch holiday party. I forgot to mention that in my event. So if you are on Long Island, I know Food and Water Watch also has a holiday party in New York, and they're a wonderful organization doing such good work, looking out for all of us and keeping us aware of what's going on in Washington and what we need to do to step up to the plate to try to protect our food. So anyway, I'll be bringing the chili there tonight. So I hope to see some of you there. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to you my guest, Chef Charles Carroll. He's the author of a wonderful new book called The Recipe, A Story of Loss, Love, and the Ingredients of Greatness. And Chef Charles is an award-winning chef. He travels the world speaking on championship thinking and personal greatness. He's the past president of the World Association of Chef Societies. He's been lauded by 5 U.S. presidents for his work with the U.S. troops abroad. And he's the luminary of the Culinary Olympics, which I did not even know about. And I'm excited to talk to him about that, which is held every 4 years in Germany. And he's currently the executive chef at one of the busiest country clubs in the country, producing the prestigious River Oaks Country Club. In addition to he has another leadership and tasty success by becoming a professional chef. And 2011, Chef Carroll did all the sound here. We're hopefully not get on air, but honoring our chefs, and he's putting on a series of Vegas-style shows and presenting a home-cooked Cajun meal for thousands of U.S. troops in the middle of a war zone. And so this organization that he founded called Operation Hot is really has been doing some great work. And I'll talk about it. It's my pleasure to introduce to all of you, Chef Charles Carroll. Chef, are you with me?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry about that technical difficulty. It happens sometimes.
Yeah. But don't you love technology?
I do. But I'm so happy to have you on. The work you've been doing is just incredible. I love your book. Before we get into the book, I'd like to just touch a little bit on your history. Like, how did you first get into food and cooking? Did you always know you wanted to be a chef?
Well, kind of. I guess I grew up in a country inn in Vermont, and that's where I was always chasing my dad around the kitchen. And actually, when I was in third grade, I actually started cooking breakfast for the guests, those poor people. But I actually got pretty good at it and enjoyed it. And growing up in your own business, a lot of your listeners can appreciate, you know, you work 8 days a week because it is a family business, and that's what we did. So, you know, I wanted to be a professional basketball player or a chef, and the 5'9" thing didn't work out. So here I am.
Good. And when did you first learn of the Culinary Olympics? Because I you know, I've heard of, you know, of course, the baking, the French baking competition, but the Culinary Olympics is new to me. Tell me about it.
Well, it's about 100 years old, and the American Culinary Federation usually puts together a team, the ACF, as we call it. It has 20,000 members nationwide, and my dad was a culinary instructor at the local high school in Vermont, St. Johnsbury, Vermont, and he showed a video one day of the World Culinary Olympics when I was a senior in high school, and I looked at that, and we had competed in a couple little shows as a high school, and when I saw the video, I'm thinking, well, back then Bhavani, it was a reel to reel, so I'm showing my age a little bit, but after I saw that video, I said, that's what I want to do. And then when I went to Culinary Institute of America in New York, I saw a lot of the instructors in the hallways that were in the video, so I chased them around and volunteered for whatever I could. And then after that, I just, became a member of 8 different Culinary Olympic teams. So it's been an amazing journey. And then I've been blessed to, have some friends, not only, some really great chefs all across the United States, but parts of the world as well.
Uh-huh. And you actually won the gold medal one year, didn't you?
I have several, actually, several gold medals from the World Culinary Olympics, and there's a couple there that are very special to me from the Olympics. One of them was the 1988 was the number one regional team in the world, so we won more gold medals than any other regional team. And then there was another time where the category that I was working on was best in the world. So, that's pretty, just to stand on stage and represent the United States in anything, is pretty cool. So, it brings goosebumps to just talking about it.
Uh-huh. And where in Germany is it?
It was in Frankfurt, Germany for, most of the Olympics. And it's every 4 years, just like the Sports Olympics. And it actually coincides with the Summer Olympics in sports. And you can relate it very much to that because, you need to compete a lot as an individual with the ACF competitions, and then you have to garner enough qualifications to even try out for the team. And then when you do the tryouts, typically they do 3 regional tryouts, and then you have to score high enough to go on to the second stage, which would be a hot food competition. And then you go to that part of the competition, and they pick usually the top 10 chefs, and 5 for a national team and 5 for a regional team. So it's pretty intensive. And then once you get on that team, you practice for 3 years straight. And it's usually every 3 or 4 weeks you travel somewhere and you work all through the night and you're cooking and learning and developing and researching.
You practice with your teammates.
Oh, yeah. And then you become a team, which is a whole different part of your career because, usually you've been competing as an individual all that time. And right. Now you start competing as a team, and that's when it's really special because, when you do something as a team, you make that journey together. Those are lifelong friendships forever.
Uh huh. Cooking is being used a lot these days in team building. I know I've done some team building for some organizations, and when people are together in the kitchen, like I was talking about feeding the homeless, I do this once a year, and I always talk once a year, but for Christmas and Thanksgiving. But I always talk about how I feel like the people that come and volunteer almost get more out of it than the people we're actually feeding, because just that work of working together with strangers, and by the time you're finished, you're no longer strangers, and you really kind of work together with strangers to create something beautiful, and it's really brings people together.
Well, there's so many reasons for that, too. First of all, there's a giving aspect of it, and then there's a cooking aspect of it. When you have a party at your house, where does everybody end up? Everybody ends up in the kitchen, and, cooking is such a wonderful thing that we do, and food is a part of everybody's life, whether they want it to be or not, it is. And so you can always tell someone's cooking from the heart just by the way they're handling the food. So there's that aspect of it, And there's no better feeling than giving, and in the team building thing aspect of it, we have that at the club as well. We do cooking classes, and you know, you get 20 people in the kitchen and a glass of wine, and it's never going to go wrong.
Right. You're so right with that. And so how has that experience doing the Olympics affected your career and your life?
Well, that's a great question, and it has tremendously. I was a chef at the Balsams Grand Resort Hotel in northern tip of New Hampshire. It's a 4-star, 4-diamond resort hotel, and I was there 13 years, and I went through the apprenticeship program there prior to going to the CIA. And so I got on my first team there. I was very young. I think I was 24, 5, or 6, 24 when I got on the team maybe. And we had a team of 60 chefs there at that property. So, you know, you're traveling every 4 weeks for 3 years, and it's wearing on your family. It's wearing on everybody and wearing on your colleagues. But you know, the secret there is to share those experiences when you come back. And I had a very young staff as well. We had 20 apprentices there. So when I came back with the Olympic gold medal and the youngest guy on the team, you know, I soon realized that it came with a lot of responsibilities, and because people are coming to work at the resort because the fact that there was Olympic gold medal chef there, and they wanted to get on a team, and so it drove me to work harder and to realize it comes with a great responsibility, and I have to continue to study and continue to stay ahead of these younger culinarians are willing to push me out of the way to climb the ladder. So, you know, they hung on every word, and that's a really important message to the listeners out there. I mean, because when you're climbing the ladder at a young age, and you know, you want to get that next thing, but you know, you better take close inventory of the people around you, because they are listening to you, they're watching you, and they're learning from you, and you know, what's their impression of you. So that's a pretty serious responsibility, and that's how you can. That's when I first started learning on how to build teams and build great teams, and that's why I wrote that first book, Leadership Lessons from a Chef: Finding Time to Be Great. Because you know, that book is all about how to build great teams and get people want to work for you.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so interesting to talk about that, because chefs very often have a reputation for not being so nice, you know, in the kitchen. Mm. And before I became a chef, I was a waitress for years, and I worked in so many different restaurants, from, you know, the diner to French restaurants. And, you know, if a patron was returning food for some reason, you were scared to go into that kitchen.
You know, yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
Play it at you, or throw the spit on the food, or, I mean, you just didn't know, you know, it's just, you get all this anxiety, just the fact of having to go into the kitchen to talk to the chef, because you just didn't know how it was going to go over.
Right.
So, you know, talking about being a role model, and that's what you said in life, you know, I'm a Waldorf teacher, and we talk about, you know, kids learning through role modeling. That's how they learn.
Mm. Well, you know, I had an epiphany at a very young age, and I'm glad I did. And I was a sous chef at the time at the Balsams. And the chef ahead of me was a screamer. He was, man, he just got in everybody's face. And I was the exec sous. And so he was off one day. He used to ride this one apprentice. And so the next day the chef was off, and I was in there as exec sous, and I was in charge that evening, and we're really busy. And the other sous chef came up, and I was working with one of this apprentice that the executive chef always rode. And I was working with him, got him set on the station. Then I walked away, and the sous chef came over to me and said, "How come you don't ride him like the chef does?" And without even thinking about it, and you know, I was too young to know what I was even saying, but without even thinking about it, I said, "Because I get more out of him when I work with him." And so that's when those light bulbs go off. You know, I don't think I've raised my voice in the kitchen. You know, I could probably count on one hand in the last 15, 20 years. And that's how we like to have our kitchen. And I have 74 employees here.
Wow. Wow. So where are you working now? Tell us about the country club you're working at right now.
Yeah, it's River Oaks Country Club. It's one of the top country clubs in the United States. We have 74 employees. You probably apologize if you hear the clanking in the background in the kitchen right now. I'm in the middle of the headquarters here. But we have 3 restaurants and 6 kitchens. And we do 80 to 100 functions a week on average, although this month we're doing in excess of 100 parties a week. And it's a really busy operation, but it's a fantastic property.
Mm-hmm. Now, working in that kind of volume, are you allowed to source ingredients and pay attention to the quality of the ingredients that you're using? Because I know, you know, cost is always such an issue. And when you're working in volume, very often, you know, you don't have the luxury of sourcing quality ingredients. How do they do it at your country club?
Well, you're right. It's a great question. But what we do is that, you know, in our three restaurants, those are our members' dining facilities. So, there could be non-members eating there, but they have to be a guest of a member. And then all the banquet functions that I mentioned, which is a lot. Those are the opportunities. The restaurants is the opportunities where we can really source fantastic products and order the best and research the best. And as well, you know, you got to stay ahead of the business. So it's a fast moving ball. But you know, our members are well traveled, and they pay a lot of money to be a member here. So you know, they deserve to have the best. So we have that luxury to go ahead and source the best for it, and that's what we do for the restaurants. And you know, don't get me wrong, the banquets are great too. But you know, we're not going to use an organic salad green for, you know, 600 salads, you know, 15 times a week kind of thing. You know what I mean? We can't afford to do that, but we can't, you know, afford to extend those luxuries to our members.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And as a chef, how does that feel to you? Do you have separate refrigerators for like the good quality stuff and the not good quality stuff? I also am committed to sourcing really good stuff. And yet if I'm, you know, doing a function for free and I'm donating food, I can't always have the luxury of doing that either.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
I have to go to Restaurant Depot and buy a big box of the salad greens as opposed to going into my own garden and harvesting it, you know?
Right. Right. Well, we do have a pretty large purchasing area, and there is a cooler for each category. And so we have a produce cooler, we have a dairy cooler, we have a meat and fish cooler, and butcher shop. So everything is kind of separated and temperature controlled that way. And, but what we're somewhat computerized as well. So each kitchen, AM and PM, they'll put their orders in. So there's several different categories of kitchens that are placing their orders, and the purchasing agent builds those carts. So when they come in the morning, they can pull their cart and go to work, and they're ready to go, and it's pretty efficient. And so they do all that ordering via computer, and they send it to the purchasing area. So those specs, you know, whether it be the organic greens or the, you know, especially the restaurants when they have the special farm-raised or grass-fed beefs or whatever it is, those are specify when they order and they're put on the cart. So it works pretty well.
Great. Let's take a couple minute break. And when we come back, I want to talk about your book, the recipe. And I also want to talk about this organization you started. That's, you know, where you're serving the chefs. I'm sorry. You're serving
the troops. Yeah.
In Afghanistan. And it just sounds fascinating. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. We're going to take a couple minute break. And when we come back, we'll be talking again with Chef Charles Carroll. And you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back.
Progressive Radio Network is now on iTunes. Search for us to listen and download past shows or get them updated automatically. Just type Progressive Radio Network in the search bar and download any show free of charge. Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
This is Tharna Noor from the Real News Network. Our daily podcast is now on Progressive Radio Network, so tune in for the week's top stories and analysis. That's Wednesdays at 11 a.m. And for more info, head over to therealnews.com. Thanks for joining us.
We are PRN. 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 Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned.
and I'm Beatty Confredos, host of the Ask Beatty Show. Have you ever wondered how Dr. Gary Null, born and raised in Parkersburg, a small town in West Virginia, became an internationally recognized alternative health expert, activist, author of dozens of bestsellers, filmmaker, radio talk show host, entrepreneur, and founder of the Progressive Radio Network? Well, your wait is finally over. Join me on my Ask Beatty Show on Monday, December the 18th from 3 to 4 p.m. for an intimate conversation with Gary. This is an interview that you will definitely not want to miss.
PRN would like to thank its listeners for making us number one on Zeno Radio's phone service and also the top searched internet radio station on Google. Thank you for helping us move forward.
Everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with Chef Charles Carroll talking about his new book, The Recipe, a story of loss, love, and the ingredients of greatness. And Chef, can you tell me about the book and how did you come to be writing it with John David Mann? He's one of the best-selling authors of The Go-Giver. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to tell you about the book. John David Mann is one of the best writers in America today. He's an amazing guy, seven-time national best-selling author. And I had two other books, Leadership Lessons from a Chef, and then also Tasting Success, which are, I'm proud to say, are being used in over 70 hospitality schools around the country and parts of the world. And about 7 years ago, I read The Go-Giver, and I was on Facebook having a cup of coffee one morning, and I saw John Mann there, and I pinged him, and I said, "Hey, love your book," and he pinged back, and I was shocked, and so we struck up a conversation, and one thing led to another, and I said, "Hey, I got this third book I'm thinking about," and told him the idea behind it, and he said, "Oh my God, I love it," and I said, "Do you mind if I send you what I have so far?" I had about 8 chapters, And so I did, and he loved it. And I said, "I would love to be able to work with you on a book." And, you know, if you talk to him, he'd tell you, "I wish he had a penny every time somebody told him that line." But, it just worked out that John's a foodie. And so it's taken us this long for the stars to line up because he's so busy and I was so busy. But I knew that he was the guy I wanted, and he's an amazing writer. And so we had a blast writing this book. It's about a story about a little boy who loses his dad at a young age, and he's mad at the world, mad at God, and gets himself in a bunch of trouble. And this crusty old diner chef, ex-military guy, sees the boy in trouble, and he reaches out. And each chapter is a life lesson. In each chapter, they cook something together. And it's a wonderful, heart-tugging story that comes full circle. And Bhavani, I'm very, very proud to tell you that that on December 27th, we'll be having a meeting, working out a deal for it to become a movie. So we're really excited.
Ooh, that is very exciting. I love foodie movies. they're great.
Well, yeah. That's why we think it's going to be so good, because, I mean, think about how many food movies are out there. There are about 5 or 6 good ones that you can remember, And food is, when we're going to different publishers with this book, they said, "Well, I'm not sure which category this book goes in." And I'm thinking, how can you not see this? I guess I put it in the category of everybody, because food affects everybody. And I guess if you don't like food, this book's not for you. So it's a wonderful story, and it's doing very, very well right now.
Yeah, and it's, it's not a cookbook, but it's a story of life, and you kind of use this this child's story to kind of share some of the life lessons that you've learned and that you also talk about in some of your other books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's true. That's true. If you think about it, I mean, it's so easy to relate to food, right? Because food is around everything that we do in life. Food is a part of all our celebrations in life, and they're also parts of milestones in our career and graduations, and then, you know, honoring people's life stories and at their time of death, and holidays, and food is a part of everybody's life, and food also has a life of its own, and you know that better than anybody. We have to nurture and take care of our planet and our food, and we plant a seed and we water and fertilize it, and we take care of it, and we harvest, and then what do we do after we harvest? We make sure and that's a lot of the big lesson for our young people out there today is, you know, you need to respect where it came from and all the amount of people that were involved in making sure that tomato was a beautiful tomato. So then now you have a huge responsibility doing the right thing. So those special stories are woven all through the book, and it gets pretty emotional.
Uh-huh. Well, a couple lines that stand out from the book. One is, everything you cook reveals everything you are.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you, and how does that apply to chefs?
Well, think about it. I mean, an angry chef or an angry cook cannot cook good food. You know, and then if I can challenge your listeners to think right now, close your eyes and think of the time, or even right now during the holidays, during Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, remember those times when you go to your grandmother's house, and, you know, and she's, you know, got the oven mitts on, and she pulls this special thing out of the oven, and how proud she was. And it was always this something wonderful that everybody loves, and only grandma can make it. And you started learning those recipes from her, or your mother, or your father, whoever it is. I mean, there's a lot of ways to cook. You can cook to punch in, punch out, and get the food out quick because we're really busy. Or you could really care about where that tomato came from. How does it taste today compared to yesterday? You know, cook from the heart. Or you can cheat your way through it, and the food's not going to be anywhere near as good. So, you know, that's kind of where it comes from. You know, you're only as good as your last meal, and you have to, you know, how you cook every single day is who you are. You can't put that fine dining event on for all the VIPs tonight and not care about the other 14 parties we have tomorrow. You know, that will quickly reveal who you are.
Right, right. You know, and these days so many people eat out so much of the time that, you know, something I talk about, and I think you agree, is that, you know, how the mood you're in transfers into your food, you know? And so if you have a happy chef cooking your food for you, it's going to have a different energy than if you had someone who was angry behind there cooking the food. And, you know, I often talk to parents, you know, when I'm doing cooking demos for PTAs and stuff, and I'm trying to encourage parents to go back into the kitchen and cook for their kids, because when they're cooking for their kids and they're putting their love into it, it has a different nutritional value than if you're just giving them a Big Mac at McDonald's, you know, not just the quality of the food, but the energy that is going into it, I think, is really important. And I don't think people give enough credence to that. Another line you have, pay attention to the little things. When you do, the big things tend to take care of themselves. That's a good one. That's really great.
Yeah. Having mentored young professionals most of my career, you know, when you get somebody that comes in, they get a brand new starts chef jacket on, and they bought four or five cookbooks, man, they're ready to go. They want that next sous chef job. You know, they want that job now. They want the title on their jacket, the business cards or whatever. And, you know, and especially today's generation, not to bark on that, but, you know, everything is so quick for them because they can get, you know, what would take us, you know, weeks of research to do or find or write. Now you can find it at the click of a mouse, you know, so they're used to getting things very, very quickly. But, you know, we try to teach, you know, don't worry about the 7-course meals. Don't worry about the sugar centerpieces or the chocolate centerpieces right now, or that beautiful wedding cake. Don't worry about that right now. Worry about the little things. Worry about all the details right now. How are you dicing that? I'm watching a chef right outside my window carefully slicing and slivering some shallots, and they're perfectly being shaved. You know, he's worried about that shallot. Make sure that all those dices are exactly correct. Worry about, you know, your craft, your skill set, learning the basics of cooking. And that's how all this is woven into the book, the recipe. And if you make sure you do all those little things correctly, the big things happen all by themselves.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's great. So let's talk about Operation Hot. Back in, you started that in 2011. Is that correct? Is that when you started?
Yeah, I put together two different missions that we went on, and that was 2011-2013. And Operation Hot stands for Honoring Our Troops. And I went to Afghanistan three different occasions, one for a recon trip. But so basically what we did is we put together a celebrity team and support team of 20, and I hired another 10 from Kuwait, the AV and sound engineers. And we went into Afghanistan the first time in Bagram, the second time in Kandahar. You know, these bases have 35,000 troops on it, you know, that have a live weapon 24/7. And these are kids, you know, they're, you know, 18 yeah. to 24 year olds. And it's just an amazing time of my life. We went, we fed 5,000 troops the second time. We gave away 5 ton of gifts and we did 5 shows. You know, we did one large one for 7 hours on the main base. We did one in Kuwait, and then we did 3 in forward operating bases, which is outside the wire in Afghanistan. And that's some crazy times. Then jumping in Chinook helicopters and taking your team with a little bit of food and some gifts to, you know, out into these forward operating bases that were, you know, you're in the war zone, you know, and you got that. We had the general security team, and I mean, it was really sobering. Some of the things that we saw, the missions that we saw, the hospitals, the Purple Hearts that just lost, you know, I can remember several stories of a gentleman just lost one of his legs. And you know, I planned these trips, you know, for 14, 16 months at a time. And I couldn't be more prepared for everything that we had to do. And I was the MC and the host of the show. And I organized everything, but I wasn't prepared for how to address these soldiers that were Purple Hearts, now Purple Hearts, and injured in the hospital. I froze, and I was really hard on myself about it, and it's really emotional. And I told myself, you know, you better get your head out of your know what right now. You know, this is why you're here. You know, and so it's very emotional. We saw Taliban prisoners that have been captured, and they were all bloody. We were in the hospital when they were being, you know, they were handcuffed and they were being marched in through because we have to take care of them too. And to see somebody, you know, that injured, handcuffed, and Taliban like you see on TV, 1 foot away from you, you know, with, you know, security guards and everything else, it's just amazing. It's very, very emotional and life changing.
I can't even imagine. Now, how'd you cook for 5? Do they have a? They must have some sort of commercial kitchen there, right? Because they have to cook for all those people anyway.
Yeah, they're called DFACs, dining facilities, you know, each one would serve 5,000 people. So they had, you know, 7 or 8 of those on bases, and only a few of them actually are run by the U.S. troops themselves. A lot of them are catered from. You know, outsourced, but we still do have some of them that are run by the U.S. troops, and yeah, they're amazing. You know, it's amazing the food they can get in the war zone, but it's serious business. It's a lot of food, and you have to worry about the nutrition, everybody, and dehydration. I mean, the training that we received, you know, I felt like almost we had more training on the dehydration and how much water we needed to drink than what to do if you're caught in an air raid or a ambush. You know, there's, you know, there's in every restroom, there's these charts. And so you can, you know, see if you're dehydrated when you're going to the bathroom, you know, you can check yourself and make sure you're, you know, because that first war we went into, we were terribly prepared for it. We lost a lot of people to dehydration. So it's amazing.
Sounds amazing. Sounds amazing. I know the military next to, I don't know if it's, I think the military buys more food than all the public schools, but I think public schools are right next to the military in purchasing. Is that correct?
I'm not sure about the school stat, but I know that I think that they are the biggest customer in the United States for sure. I forget the number now, but I want to say it was like $5 billion business. And that's actually how I made Operation Hot work. Is a buddy of mine, Chief David Longstaff, who's now retired, he's a CW5. He was in charge of all the food for all the military all around the world. And that's just insane. And there's 250 forward operating bases in Afghanistan alone. And, I'm the only civilian ever in the history to do shows in a war zone. And if you're going to do a show and you're going to go over there and perform, you're going to do it one of two ways. You're going to go through the USO or the MWR. And that's the MWR is the military version of USO. And if you're going to do that, those restrictions are 6 people, no food, no donations, no gifts, no nothing. You just go as 6 people, you tour around, maybe you'll sing, or there's no equipment. We had 30,000 pounds of show gear. Imagine that. It filled the whole C-16. It filled the whole damn plane. So we officially changed how donations are ever given in the future, because it was a big task. But I got to tell you, we made an impact on the people there. We received emails and letters, and we had pictures taken with these soldiers, and I'm talking about thousands of photo ops, and please, here's an email and phone number of my mom. When you get home, please tell her that you saw me and that I'm fine, and those kind of things. And we were giving out hugs. Huh. And soldiers are talking to me about suicide, and they didn't even know why they were there. And that's how the president thing started. And it went in 2011. I said, after hearing all these suicide stories from soldiers that had tears in their eyes, I said, I don't even know why I'm here. I was supposed to be out of here 4 months ago, and I don't even know why we're fighting. And so that's when I said, you know what, we got to do this again. And then we're going to get messages from all 4 past presidents. Video messages telling them that we haven't forgotten you. We had messages from Rudy Giuliani. We had messages from every walk of life. It was very video animated. And we just wanted to make sure that the troops knew that we care about them and we think about them every day. And that's what our mission was, to touch their hearts.
Uh-huh. It sounds amazing. Now, how did you fund that? Like, how did, obviously the military didn't pay for it.
You got that right. it all came out of my office. Every single detail came out of my office. And I work at a very special club. And when you work at such a private club, you can't really address the members or especially solicit them. There was creative ways where we talked to a couple of members about it and asked them what their ideas were. Anyway, long story short was, the first trip we raised $165,000, and the second trip we raised $260,000, and about 92% of it was given to us by our membership, if you can imagine that.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's special stuff. Just really special.
Wow.
I have some really fantastic video footage on my website, chefcharlescarroll.com. You can go there, and there's some tear-jerking videos. We have a sizzle reel there, a trailer of it, and there's also a 30-minute version of the movie. And you'll see, it'll bring tears to your eyes. You'll see what we were in.
Uh-huh. Definitely. Sounds amazing. So I'm sure you brought a lot of those lessons back, and are probably many of those lessons are here in the book.
They are. I was never in the military, and I don't know what triggered me to get into this, but it just seemed like after 9/11, hearing the national anthem was so emotional, and I don't know how I can't explain it, and I don't know why, but it just tugged on me, and this thing happened, and this is what we did, and it's an amazing amount of work, Bhavani, every single day, plus your real job, and it's one of those things. I'm blessed to have done a lot of amazing things in my life, but it's all about not giving up, and just working on it every single day. And I don't believe in, you know, I don't want to get too cliche-ish, you know, I don't believe in failure. It's, you know, it's not so much that is that you're going to get bumped along the road. And I was told, I don't know how many times that the mission is not going to happen. In fact, it was even 3 weeks before we were left, the general called me. So we're pulling the plug on the mission. And I said, all right, well, hold on. You know, I just spent all this money and guaranteed to our members that we're going to do this. And so it's a great lesson in life. And let's just take a look at it. And then we'll move a little bit left or a little bit right. And that's how I've been, you know, my God, we're talking about a movie for the recipe. You know, I said I wanted to write a book 7 years ago and I want it to be a movie. And I just kept telling myself about it and now it's about to happen. And there is a lot of military, accent in the book. You know, it has a lot to do with the discipline. You know, you want to say, is it about Owen the boy or is a book about the chef? And it's really about both of them. And that's why it's that book is emotional. So we're just super excited. And I am working on a TV show right now. We're shooting the pilot the first week in January. There's another dream that we're just pounding on. It's about to happen. And, you know, the podcast, the recipe podcast, is we're being listened to in 10 different countries right now. That's really going well. So I'm just really excited where I am right now in my life. And if I could tell anything, any of your listeners learned anything from me today, it would be just keep pounding, you know, have the courage to dream and then have the courage to chase those dreams and go after them. And don't worry about, you know, I'm doing things this month I wasn't even dreaming about 8 months ago. And just be okay with the process. And if something doesn't work out, let it bump you a little bit left, let it bump you a little bit right, and just keep on going. It will happen if you keep pounding.
Right. Sounds amazing. Just you're following your passion. And when you have passion and you follow, you just follow your passion, it's going to take you to some really great places. And like you said, you know, bumps in the road are part of it. Those are the lessons, and that's what we learned.
Yeah, and be okay with it. You know, be okay with the process. And you know, I think life is a bunch of ones. It's one at a time. You know, we get one thing at a time. And I like to, in my life, I kind of measure it up to wins. You know, I need a win every once in a while. I like to have a win every week if I can. And I, you know, a win would be talking to you right now on this station today. This is a win for me, you know, and a special phone call yesterday and the phone call last week that say, hey, let's meet on the 27th to sign the deal for this movie on the recipe. That's a win, you know, but the wins come in all shapes and sizes. You know, putting out this great, we have two VIP lunches today, you know, putting those out to the best of our ability. That's a win, you know, so there's some kind of adrenaline in me it's one at a time and just be okay with the process.
Well, thank you for joining me today because it's been inspirational just talking to you. I can feel your passion and, you know, you're making a difference in the world and you're making a difference in many people's lives. So everyone who's been listening, check out Chef Charles' website and his podcast. You want to share that one more time?
Yes, it's Chef Charles Carroll, CARROLL.com, ChefCharlesCarroll.com. And the books are on there. Everything's on there. And also you can find the book, The Recipe, Story of Lost Love and the Ingredients of Greatness on Amazon. And leave us a review. That's how, be part of this movie process. You know, the reviews are really important right now. So thank you for that.
Okay, I'll definitely do that. Thanks so much for joining me, Chef. And everyone out there, thank you for joining me. Have a wonderful rest of the week. And I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.